Com, and we are going to be talking baseball and media. And if you like the way that baseball games are currently displayed, you can thank the guys who are on this panel, or you can ask them why things aren't the way that you like them to go. Or you can blame the guys on this panel. At any rate, I'm going to introduce everybody one by one. Immediately to my right is Rob Shaw. He's the head of broadcast for Bloomberg Sports. He's won 6 AP awards for sports reporting when he was a reporter in Tallahassee. Now he's moved to the business side. Hold on, applause. Rob Shaw, you have huge fans in the front.
Can take yourself, please.
I'm
going to
applaud.
Okay. Well, hot mic. To his right, we've got Jeff Bennett. He's the senior director with ESPN Stats and Info Group. He forgot to give up anything for Lent this year. Shame on you, Jeff. But he has won 4 Emmys, so that's nice. He's got that going for him. And then to his right is the host of Shark Tank on HDNet. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not Mark Cuban. It's Ryan Sanders. GM of Sport Vision's baseball products. He was involved, of course, with the development of some very popular products, Pitch FX, Hit FX, and Field FX. So thank you for that, Ryan.
You're welcome.
The baseball world thanks you for that. Yes, now you can clap. By the way, is this loud enough?
Yes.
Okay. So I actually want to start at, I'm usually not a homer, but I am going to start with Jeff from ESPN. Jeff, how would you characterize where baseball analytics is right now for the worldwide leader and where it was when you started in 1994? Way back when.
Yeah, so when we started in 1994, I would say it was a zero on a 0-100 scale as far as analytics.
A zero?
Knew where Bill James was, but integrating into what we did on our event broadcasts and shows like Baseball Night and SportsCenter. There were more historical-based information. A researcher for Baseball Tonight back then was David Pinto, who maybe you know from Baseball Musings. He was fantastic, worked for StatSync. So there was some breakdown stuff there, but I wouldn't say, even given Dave's background, that we really were pushing some of the metrics. This wasn't really, I think, accepted by our production team and probably our perception of what the national audience is. Fast forward to where we are now, it's evolving actually fairly quickly in the last, I'd say, 5 years.
What was the catalyst for that?
I would say it certainly didn't hurt that Moneyball became kind of a phenomenon, and people, teams like the Red Sox winning a World Series and it being more public on which teams were starting to dabble, and now almost all 30 organizations probably have some degree. And this is a big understanding, and in fact, it permeated beyond baseball to other sports as well. Helpful like a show like the Sports Center. So, we're pretty aggressive on a show like Baseball Tonight that caters to a baseball-centric audience. We hit on it occasionally with Sports Center, and for even our event games, we have different challenges, but we're going to, every year we roll out a few different things, and they're actually very open to it. It's just more of a production challenge because it's the way the games are produced.
So, Ryan, I know that you work with Jeff in a number of baseball products. How much more educated can fans be? I feel like you can go to any number, right? You can go to any number of websites during a game. There's plenty of stats, more stats than there were certainly 2 or 5 years ago during the game. How do you find that balance? How much more educated do you think fans want to be?
Well, I think that's the beauty of the technology curve is that the data exists, and you can go find it. If it's not on the broadcast, you can go to an ancillary platform like a .com or a blog or social. Certainly, you're not going to see stories about deflection, break, and release point, live in game. Maybe someday you will. It's going to be hard for a broadcaster to really, I think, tell that story. What's that? Yeah. Well, I do have a funny story about when we first started this project in Nesson. During the broadcast, we did a test with them, and I'm a Red Sox fan. Jerry Remy is their color commentator, and I was explaining to him at the time we put the deflection break number on the actual broadcast graphic. So I'm sitting there explaining to him, it's great, it's basically deflection break is the difference of a ball that doesn't spin versus the pitch, and he's just staring at me with this blank stare saying, "Son, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about." So that's the challenge that we face, is you have to put it in the right medium, and I think that's why you're seeing things on ESPN.com and MLB.com. So the smart people or the people who are really into statistics, they can find that information, it's there.
So in other words, if you are into advanced analytics, there's no hope for you in terms of the in-game broadcast experience?
I don't know if that's the case. I think you're seeing more and more. We're taking baby steps. I mean, what we've done with Foxtrax, Pitchtrax, K-Zone is the storyline we're showing is where did that ball cross the home plate? We're doing things now more with, let's see that collection of pitches. You're going to see some new things with, you know, hitter heat maps to show, you know, where did that ball go in, with a hitter's power zone? So is that pitcher pitching the right pitch? So you're going to start to see more, but again, the broadcaster has to be able to tell that story, and the visualization has to be something that an average fan can look at within a second or two and understand what that means. So you'll start to see more of that.
Hitter heat zone, you don't say.
Mm-hmm.
When is that going to start?
Monday. Yeah, so that's what you alluded to. Sport Vision and ESPN are working on this.
I think we're breaking news here.
Yeah, so. And our broadcast for the Monday afternoon spring game is the Phillies and Tigers. We're going to be testing it live on the air. So what you see is really what we're doing for the first time. So it's going to be a heat zone. It's like a 4x4 hot zone grid. Baby steps for the broadcast here. But it's going to be in the virtual K zone. So it's going to be telling a story, maybe not the more advanced story that you can certainly get online. But it's a story in a broadcast. So it's a step for us.
And Ryan, was that product developed because fans demanded it, because media wanted it, or because you're doing it already for some teams? I mean, how did that product get developed?
It's because Jeff asked for it.
Okay.
we used heat maps a lot. For Baseball Tonight last year, we used them occasionally, basically taking an image off our user interface and putting it on the screen, having an analyst talk about it, which we can do in a studio show like Baseball Tonight easier. We do them on ESPN.com, and some of our writers like Mark Simon and Jeremy Lundblad for ESPN Boston use the heat maps all the time. We even have some interactive heat maps we do on ESPN.com, and it's on Insider. But we had to translate that over to an event broadcast. So we're doing a simpler version of that, but we wanted to migrate to another platform, and that's why we approached Sport Vision, another one of our partners, to make this happen.
And we're keen on it, sorry. Because the storyline for a lot of these live products have been, was that pitch a ball or a strike? And that's what we're trying to get away from. Although that is a storyline, we can't avoid it. Showing hitter tendencies and pitcher tendencies within that graphic, I think, are going to create new storylines that will kind of take it away from, you know, how good was this umpire?
Well, how do you balance how much stats you can fit on a screen? You know, I know that with K-Zone and with the heat zone, it's going to be superimposed, correct? Over home plate?
With K-Zone it will be, but there will be other durations where, you know, it could be off to the side as well.
Okay, but for ESPN,
for us, the majority, our goal this year is to have it inside the K-Zone, living inside the K-Zone, and there's a little bit of flaw in that too, so we're not showing the hot zones, like say someone like Vlad Guerrero or Ichiro, who was both of them a few years ago when they were really good. They could have hot zones outside the strike zone. We're not doing that story. We're not trying to complicate. We're really showing, from the pitcher's perspective, here's the strike zone. He's presumably trying to throw a strike, but sometimes not, but pretend he is, depending on the count. And then if he does, watch out, because of that red spot is where the hitter hits really well. So,
Rob, I want to bring you into this conversation. It's Rob, right? Rob Shaw? Okay. So what are you hearing from the other broadcasters you're talking to? We know how ESPN is approaching analytics, but you guys work with Fox as well as Turner,
right?
Well, what is their appetite like for advanced stats?
You know, I think it's so I come more from your side with being a journalist with a background. And for us, watching a game is all about storytelling. And for us, it's trying to find ways to better tell the story. And I think what ESPN and Sports Vision is doing makes a lot of sense. And I think the more in depth you can get, but at the same time, not confusing your audience. I think that's where there's often a great fear. And sometimes it's not even your audience, because we work with a lot of regionals. Sometimes it might be the play-by-play guy just not very comfortable going that deep. A lot of them like to tell the story they've been telling for 25, 30 years. No names to mention. But look, there is an art to that as well. And look, that's my point, is when you're watching a telecast, sometimes you don't necessarily want to go that deep, and sometimes you want to hear a great story. And that's something, I mean, the Jeremy Lin thing is amazing. You can go into the advanced analytics behind it. I know Sports Science did a great job with ESPN on that, but sometimes you just want to hear a story. So it's trying to find ways to take the analytics to help tell different stories, but at the same time not confusing the audience and not confusing the broadcaster. So I think for the most part we all have very similar data. In fact, the data we have through BAM is Sports Visions. But I think the added value that we have at Bloomberg is we try to provide business solutions. That's what Bloomberg LP is all about in finance. So we've created tools that's going to be able to really dig through that data at a very granular level and come up with some really intriguing analytics. And one idea is, what's the next pitch that this pitcher's going to throw? Based on it being a 1-2 count against that specific batter in this specific inning, in this specific base configuration. So
there's not a lot of time for a fan though. Well, I mean, you have to get it to the announcer.
Right.
And then the fan has to...
And it's up live like that. So it's the same idea, kind of like a bug on the screen that you just see update, similar to K-Zone in that regard. And a great quick story to explain that is from Fox about 3-4 years ago, World Series, Phillies versus Yankees. I think it might have been ninth inning or so, and I think Lidge was on the hill. And you saw, I don't know if it was Cano, but someone took third base, and I think there were two outs in that game. So he basically took, they always say don't make the last out at third, yet no one was covering third base, they were playing probably back, and so he took third base. So a lot of people immediately assumed, just from what people have been saying for years, that's a horrendous move. But McCarver actually went on air and said this is a good move because now he's taking away Lidge's slider. He can't throw the slider in the dirt for fear of a wild pitch and a run could score and the game could be tied. So we looked at that and said, you know, I wonder what the numbers actually suggest. We ran it and sure enough, there was a 24% less chance of Lidge throwing a slider in that specific situation because he took third base. And I think that's a great example where you have McCarver and his experience watching baseball for years, playing baseball for years.
Yeah, he's not really known as the advanced analytics.
Exactly. So, but it's nice. But I think a lot of people would be more comfortable hearing that, in fact, there are numbers that support that story. So that's kind of the opportunity we see.
So, you know, maybe this season or next season, how would, in the McCarver situation, where would Bloomberg Sports fit in? I mean, he was making the call based on gut.
Yeah, they actually are going to have those type of numbers. So they'll have numbers on their screen, or really not on the screen. The producers could see it and the on-air talent could see it, but they could see what the different pitch likelihood is based on every situation, as well as what is the run expectancy based on every given situation. So yeah, the whole argument whether or not a sacrifice bunt does help or does it hurt a team when they deploy it, there's actually going to be interesting statistics that, and it's very simplified, it's just going to be a percentage, like you're familiar watching on poker. It's going to basically say, what are the odds of one run scoring? And you'll be able to see if a man on first base versus a man on second with one out is a meaningful difference.
And is that something that's going to come up on the screen, or is that something that's for a second straight? You know, like you would go to a Fox app,
right,
or something, or ESPN.com or something. Look up that information.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of both. It will appear on the screen. Last year it did not. Last year it was simply a tool that was used by the broadcasters and the producers. And
so
they
will be on the screen this
But
year.
This year it will be on the screen. Yeah,
So for ESPN.com, the Game Pass integrates dynamic win probability. So that's a second screen opportunity. So if we don't have it as part of our score bug, though hopefully someday we will. But there's other information that we can use as far as scouting at pitch FX type stuff. Inside Edge gives us stuff for Game Pass as well. That can be a good second screen experience.
And where are you guys as far as, you know, the Sunday night game versus the midweek game as far as introducing? I mean, that's a mainstream audience. That's millions of people. How did producers tread that line?
Kind of what you hit on in the question earlier, I probably should have, Rob, maybe think something different. One of the tipping points you have with Sunday baseball, and it's no slant on the talent we had before, because Joe Morgan was a Hall of Famer, so was John Miller. But they weren't as open to trying these new things. I mean, they had what worked for them, and it worked for them for 21 years, and they were very successful at that. So when we changed the talent completely over, and we brought Bobby in and Oral Hershiser and Dan Schulman, we had an opportunity to try something different. So that was, when you have talent like that, that's open-minded. This year with Terry Francona replacing Bobby, obviously coming from the Red Sox organization, he's open to certain things as well. So, you know, working with talent is really, really important. We can take better risks. And maybe a couple years ago, we had John Shambi and Aaron Boone do a Wednesday game, which is nothing quite the audience's Sunday game, but we could really introduce some stuff there and take some more chances with them and kind of feel through the year and see, you know, work with the talent, what kind of stories they want to tell, and then give them some advanced numbers, and then we'll see what percentage that makes a broadcast, which is fairly small, actually. We do a lot of preparation, but the game really is, you know, that's why we love the game. It's very unpredictable, and we can't control that.
Do you think it'll get to a point where we might have a sideline reporter or an extra sideline reporter that just does stats?
I hope so. I asked for that a few years ago. In power, but I thought that would be a great thing. You had a third person who's an expert and really understands it. It comes across as like it's forced or they don't really know what they're talking about. Then we're not doing any service to the viewer. It's probably negative for us. So we have to find the right person, the right talent that can come in and do it seamlessly and really make people understand it. And it's definitely it's an art.
And you can't rely on the team in the production truck to be searching for some of these complex storylines. I think you're going to require some extra bodies and some different talent to be looking at some of this advanced data during the game to try to come up with relationships, because if anyone's ever been in a TV truck, it's just things move too fast, there's too many other commitments. It's very hard to get some of this stuff in.
And that's also part of same kind of business solutions for us. We saw that opportunity. And we staffed ourselves with about 6-7 analysts, everyone from Baseball Prospectus managing editor, and other people we've heard have come up here as panelists this weekend. So there's definitely an opportunity, and it's a push-pull situation. I think you want to have the ability to have not just give information before the game, but also even during the game, be able to kind of push something. And it's funny, I remember when the first time I spoke to one of the executive producers for Fox, he told me, okay, the best way to do it is send the email, then give me a call, and within 8 seconds tell me exactly what I need to know, then hang up the phone. So that basically tells the story. I called him, I remember one, we had our analyst call, and he said it was Fox, and it was Mets against Brewers last year. It was the seventh inning, and up to that point, Randy Wolf had not allowed an earned run in the seventh inning, a very random stat. But it was really funny. The analyst called up, and told the producer, and then I heard the producer say, "Are you still on the phone?" And then he hung up, and that was it. But yeah, you have a very short period to communicate, and that's why email definitely helps, and iPads actually help quite a bit. You'd be surprised at how many on-air people, off-air people are relying on iPads now, just because it's so quick, doesn't take up much room in the truck, and so forth.
So you're saying that Bloomberg has like a central command center, I guess, where you are literally telling the color commentators or the analysts, contextualizing what's happening on the field?
Yeah, they get free food, our analysts, so they continue working.
They stay in that room.
They stay in that room, there's no sunlight.
They watch the game, they come up with the analysis themselves.
Yeah, no, they do. I mean, these are people who... Yes, I mean, I basically assign our analysts before the game. There's a bunch of different games going on with all the regional affiliates, but they have assignments as far as which games to give them the prep for. So the cheat sheets that the announcers get in the booth with that we provided them, the same people who wrote those are the same people who are actually watching the game unfold. And they're able to kind of keep an eye on what's going on and able to let them know of any trends or any historical feats that were accomplished that maybe went under the radar.
Is that something that ESPN could
do,
Jeff?
We probably do it a little differently than that. We do a lot of pretty big notepad. We try 8 to 10 pages per game that we do from a research department, which is a mix of, I'm guessing, advanced statistics and historical trends. We work with the Live Sports Bureau, who gives kind of in-game support to baseball history type notes. And you're absolutely right, the iPad, even before that, just having PDAs in the booth. Would allow us to communicate directly with the play-by-play guy or the analyst and give them a note that otherwise we couldn't communicate to, because we're not on-site, they have their own stats guy in the booth. Our group is most basically based out of Bristol because we have so many games that it's hard for us to travel all around.
I think you mentioned the Brewers
yeah,
a couple minutes ago, but they were, I've heard from a lot of other sports reporters, very fun team to cover. Not many people watch them in the playoffs. Do you think that stats can help draw a bigger audience to baseball or a younger audience to baseball?
Is that me?
Anybody on the panel?
So I'll take a first stab at this. I don't think you just say stats, but I think it's how you utilize the statistics. So one thing that we've always talked about at Sport Vision is we're tracking the pitch in real time, right? So if we're able to do that and you have your Nintendo Wii or your Xbox, how can you interact, or your iPhone, how can you interact live with that pitch? How can the experience be more immersive? And I think some of those things, by the use of data, can attract a younger audience. Certainly, I know with MLB.com products, I mean, it's amazing how much you can keep track of the event. Where I work on the West Coast, I can watch an East Coast baseball game, the first hour or so, and then I get on the train and go home. I can then switch to my iPhone and my iPad to continue watching the game on MLB TV. There's some pretty crappy dropouts of cell coverage on my train home, so then I switch to the radio broadcast so I can still keep track of it. Then I get home and I turn on either my Apple TV or my DirecTV package, and I see the rest of the game. So I think things like that, how you present the game, how you reach, I think that's the best way to reach an audience, because everything is second screen, everything is mobile, everything is interactive. So I think that more than maybe statistics, but I think some statistics could certainly help.
I think that you often take things for granted. Like going back to that poker example, I can't even imagine watching the Poker World Series without that percentage creep up on the screen that tells me what are the odds of this guy winning the hand. Because it allows you to figure out who's playing it well, who's not playing well in this hand. I definitely think K-Zone is a great example, and to be able to actually see, because you always want your, you can't, it's tough to think backwards, but if you think about the fact that there was once a time where you didn't know if that was really a strike or not a strike, something as simple as that, the fact that we now have that, I think only helps. And the idea that we came up with for the on-base tracker that Fox used last year, being able to tell you what are the odds of every guy reaching base, and it updated based on the count, and it updates based on the inning and the base configuration and so forth, to know that, like people always say, strike one's the most meaningful pitch, really the 1-1 count. And if it's a 2-1, it's almost like a 45 to 50% chance of reaching base, but if it's 1-2, it's like 12% chance of that batter reaching base. So that's a huge disparity. And what's the common complaint about baseball? Nothing's happening. That is so not true. I mean, anyone who knows baseball knows that every single pitch matters. So to be able to actually put a number and to see it change 30% based off of a pitch is something that hopefully will be able to energize an audience that maybe did once think that there's not much going on, because there obviously is. Maybe it's just a matter of us being able to show it to them better.
But the question is, when do you think broadcasters will embrace that kind of attitude? I mean, I think that you might be unique in watching a Poker World Series or poker tournament and needing that number, but when do you think a mainstream audience is going to need that number?
Well, I mean, we're a young company. We've been around for 2 years. Last year, we've only had one customer for that specific tool. It was Fox. This year, we're going to have about a dozen or so regional affiliates who are going to do it. So it's no longer just at the national level. It's going to the regional level. So now, people who are intimate with the audience watching a Mets game will be able to actually see this unfold. So hopefully, it's only going to help everywhere. And, once you're able to creep into every broadcast, I think hopefully for us, it'll be similar to the K-Zone, where one day people will say, God, can you imagine that not being there? That's when you know that you did it right.
15 years ago, we didn't have even the score of the count on the broadcast. They had to wait till like some game situation, they flashed up on the bottom of the screen, 3-2, 2 yeah. outs. Now we have runners advancing like mid-hit sometimes, which is confusing if people turn away and say, okay, so loaded, it's like actually a solo homer. But I'm going back to your question from trying to get that younger audience. All the stats need context. I think that's what for poker does, that gives some context to that card being dealt in the hand. So people are being, I have a 10-year-old son, and this video game has win probability in it, it's a baseball game. So I don't have to explain win probability to my son. Maybe I had to do it once, but now he just gets it.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I'm still explaining that to people at ESPN who've been there for 20 years. But there's a whole age of people from an exposure standpoint that we're not going to be starting over like we are now. And people are going to be just growing up, it's going to be inherent in how they follow baseball and how they understand the game, how they think about the game. Because of all the exposure and all the great work people here do, and all the great websites that really, if you want to find, like when McCarthy was talking a couple days ago, he had the curiosity of finding things, and he found some websites here, and he drilled down, and he just learned, he had a thirst for knowledge, and he got bounced around, and he looked to somebody else, and he started finding that website, and it was a world of discovery for him. And I think that, that's what this is going to be like in a few years. It's not going to be like we're having to break down walls with people. I think it's going to be just... there'll be more into it, hopefully.
Right, the video game generation will sort of herald a new era for baseball, in your opinion.
I think so. I think just technology in general is making it a lot easier. Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting that you brought up Fox, Rob, because they don't use Fox Tracks the same way that ESPN uses K-Zone. Mm-hmm. They sort of put it up whenever they want to, it seems.
Yeah.
I think it's because they mentioned one of the Fox executives saying they created more questions than answers, because sometimes the analysis you were getting was completely conflicting with what the umpire just decided. So is more information always better?
I mean, I think that there's ways to look at it both ways. I mean, I think the bigger issue is whether or not you're going to end up distracting the audience. And to be honest, I think the way that Turner does and the way that ESPN does it, where it is up on every pitch, it doesn't. They really put it to the side, especially with HD now, where you have the widescreens. I think that really helps. And I think that's a big victory for being able to display this data without having the issue of distracting. So I understand the perspective that maybe it could be distracting. And to be honest, I mean, we had a conversation with an executive producer a little while ago, and he's covering a team that has been unsuccessful, and based on that, the ratings are skewing more towards an older traditional audience, someone who's been following, you know, fans of the team for 30 years, not so much new fans who are jumping on a bandwagon.
I'm talking about the Mets.
No, we're not talking about the Mets. But it has been tough, though. But no, the yes. But no, so his idea was interesting, and it was one of the first times I heard it. He's like, you know, all these advanced analytics are great. I want it there because I do think that it will attract some new interest, but I don't want it to distract from the current audience. So he thought of something that's been around for 20 years, that people, or 30 years, that people have just come to accept, and it's the bottom line. It's the line on the bottom of the screen. I mean, anyone on any channel can look at that, and it's no longer distracting. I mean, that's just something you assume is going to be on the screen anyway, giving you scores. So it was an interesting interpretation of how to answer that question. How do you put it there without distracting, confusing an audience? And you'll find that there's a lot of interesting ways to do it.
Brian, what's your take on that, when sometimes the analytics can conflict with the decisions on the field?
Well, I guess in the case of Foxtrax or K-Zone, I mean, I think that's, I assume you're talking about if an umpire calls a pitch and it's...
Right.
We say it's a strike and he says it's a ball. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. That's going to happen. Like Rob said, I think when you start to see a collection of pitches and a bat, I think that tells a story. It just takes it away from, you know, the umpire missed or the system's wrong, right? And clearly that's not a storyline that anyone wants. But when you start to have the collection of pitches, fans get used to seeing that, wow, he's pitching this guy high and outside. And that's the focus of the viewer now as well. That's pretty cool. Rather than this umpire stinks, or what is this graphic? I don't even understand how it works. How does it call balls and strikes? So, you know, and that's why we're doing the things we're doing with more data, more analytics, to, because, you know, with pitch effects, showing where a ball crossed the plate is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this is a mountain of interesting data. And we need to start, I think, pulling some storylines out of that do make sense for broadcast. So,
it's been great for us at ESPN, just utilizing the pitch FX, the location, especially from a pitcher perspective. So, like, the, you know, Mariano Rivera is cutter, everyone knows, but he, you know, we can show it, like, here's the heat map of where he throws it most often versus lefties and versus righties, and it's just so perfectly placed, like, just barely off the, you know, touching the edge of the strike zone,
right.
But consistently hitting that spot. Everyone knows it's going to be there. They all have the same scouting reports, but we can show the break and show, you know, what it looks like halfway and then where it ends up and how, you know, how he, you know, here's what an average person's cutter looks like, and it's getting all sorts of the plate.
Right.
Here's what his gets against lefties and righties, and that's why he takes the bats against left-handers, you know, and, you know, here's what someone did years ago when they scuffled, and then here's what they did last year when they had success, and oh, wow, because he was getting this type of movement, and he was, you know, locating this for a strike when he wanted a strike, but then his out pitch was here, and they were chasing that, and he wasn't being deceptive enough the first couple of years. And again, that's a much harder story to tell pitch by pitch in a game broadcast, but on ESPN.com or a show like Baseball Tonight, it's a much easier form for us.
And the fear of contradiction of saying, well, what happens if it shows that it was actually a ball and he called it a strike?
Right.
That's what on-air guys live for. I mean, how often do you see replays like, oh, look, he was safe. They called him out. What a horrible call. So we're used to that. I mean, even whether you have that image that shows that it was a ball or not, don't worry. It'll be instant replay after instant replay with the announcers saying that was a horrible call by the umpire. So
that's the issue.
Yeah, exactly.
And back to your question, you know, with the Rivera example, I showed that example to one of our broadcast partners, and, you know, one of the fears they had was, well, what if this What if he showed this and on an 0-2 count where 90-something percent of the time against a lefty, he's going to throw it on the outside corner? What happens if he doesn't do that? Well, okay, that's another storyline, and I think that's something
that
we'll learn that. And there, you know, there's some fear of not looking right. You know, if you go out on a limb and have a heat map up there and saying, you know, we know that he's probably going to pitch here and it doesn't happen, there's probably some fear that of the broadcaster that they're going to be wrong, but I think they'll start to pull out that is a storyline, that he went against what he normally does, and was that successful or was that not successful?
And the projections are all based on history. I mean, it's not like you're going here and saying, oh, he's going to definitely throw that. I mean, it's saying 90% of the time, he would throw it in this location based on what he's done over the last how many years. So right. You know, every year, a starting pitcher throws the ball 3,500 times. That's an incredible sample size that you have there. So to try to make, conclusions, but almost a forecast about what's going to actually take place, I think that's perfectly fine. I think the point is, historically, this is what would occur.
Yeah.
I think before we get to questions, I think one thing that everybody who's here is interested in is what are we going to see? And we went back in time in 1994, way back when, and Jeff was working at ESPN in a cubicle somewhere,
getting faxes,
wishing he had Google.
We had data. We had very little data.
So, cutting out USA Today articles,
yep,
right?
Pasting it somewhere in some personal storage area. There's years and years of newspapers that's what our resources were. And media guides, of course, and Total Baseball and books like that.
So I always wondered what was in that big building.
We have thousands and thousands of books that we unfortunately don't use as much anymore.
So the question is, what are we going to see and how are we going to consume baseball in the year 2017?
Maybe some device hasn't been invented yet that's going to be an aggregator and it's going to be interactive, even more so than we have right now. And it's going to be bringing this great history of baseball and this granular data that's being developed by companies like SportsVision. It's going to bring it right to the consumer in a little tiny device so they can be anywhere they want and interact and play around the data. Just making the data more accessible to everybody. I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. It's already happening, but there's still a long way to go.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on. With the broad platforms that we have, it's going to give us an ability to consume data more and be more customized for every fan. Something we're looking at is augmented reality, which is in a sense what we do as a company, but imagine you're at a game.
Augmented reality?
Yeah, so imagine you're at a game and you throw up your iPhone camera and you're looking at the field and we have field effects data and it could point to, you know, the shortstop and say, this guy has the second worst range in the league, you know, starting to do things like that, you know, improving the in-venue experience. I think improving just the experience on all platforms is what the future is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they continue to innovate, we'll be able to have more data to collect. So it's a situation where I think two things happen. Number one, yes, I think that the innovation, I think what SportsVision is doing with field effects, there's so much that can still be done, even in baseball that's been crunching numbers for years. There's still so much growth there, opportunity. So I think that's going to help. And then number two, the viewing audience is going to be able to have this information. I mean, and they now have that square that Steve Jobs envisioned in 1984 that he'd be able to hold on your lap and basically look at it as a magazine but give you updated information and updated statistics, and that's the iPad. So now that you have that, I think even just the next 2-3 years, you're still going to see us catch up to that technology and be able to augment the ability to watch the game and get more information. So I think it's, I'm hoping it'll be a more informed audience, which means more informed broadcasters, and we'll still be feeding the data.
Great, I think that we're going to open it up to questions. And I think we have one right in the front.
With an increase in the use of statistical analysis and data in live broadcast, do you in turn see this shaping the way managers manage the game? Essentially, when fans can live see the detriment of the intentional walk, do you see this this enlightenment basically affecting the way managers manage the game because they have to respond to the fans' angst?
I think so. I mean, it's absolutely. You know, I think that part of it is simply the education of the managers. I think that a lot of people made decisions 10 years ago, 15 years ago, simply because they didn't know any better. So now they're going to hear the reasons behind it, even reasons why they should go a certain way or another, even more. Still, there's always going to be game theory. I mean, there's always going to be that if they're expecting the sacrifice bunt, then maybe we should swing away, or vice versa. Maybe they're playing the third baseman back, so we should sack bunt, even though statistically that's not the best decision. So game theory is always going to exist, and it's always going to have managers trying to balance the percentages with the current situation at play. So I think that's always going to be the case. Are managers now going to get more get yelled at by more educated fans? Yes, I think that's already started. I think every time a decision's made that statistically isn't sound, you're already going to start hearing articles and reading articles written about it. But I do think that more than that, I think the thing that's actually going to impact the change is more statistics for them to learn how to play the game better. One of the ones that I think is most interesting is stolen bases, that if you don't, I think it's 70% or something like that, if you don't succeed at least 70% of the time, don't bother. I think something like that is an interesting influence, and I wouldn't surprise me to see managers respond differently since they now know that.
Yeah, I think the game strategy has really evolved, especially in the last 20 years in the information age. You know, in the 1980s, everyone had probably, as a team, 80 plus puck stealings per year. And then 15 years later, teams weren't even trying, maybe 70 times a year, depending on their lineup. And every leadoff hitter had to be fast, or you couldn't bat leadoff. Of course, that's changing now, too. But I'm not sure the managers will ever get as advanced as the statistics should say they should do from a strategy perspective. You know, across all sports, humans are risk averse. You know, otherwise, you see in football, I'm changing sports here, but on 4th-and-1, it's all outcome analysis. So, Falcons and Mike Smith, he goes for it in 4th-and-1 and doesn't get it. It's the worst call ever. We could show all the advanced numbers on risk reward based on the game situation and what they, you know, the last 10 years of the NFL play-by-play and this type of the stats say he should go for it, and then he doesn't do it and no one cares and he loses his job. He hasn't lost it yet, but that's what manager coaches are afraid of in other sports. So. There's a lot more, you know, 102 games a year in baseball. It's not like NFL, where everyone's watching that game because there's 16 of them. It's all on national TV. But still, I know, I think they're taking more chances and playing percentages. Always been a percentage game. But I'm not sure they're ever going to get to the point where, you know, there's, you know, everyone just doesn't sacrifice one ever again.
Well, Ryan, what about, I think that brings up a good question about perfect information, and you deal with teams and with fans and with broadcasters. Are we going to get to a point where everybody has same information easily accessible?
Probably not. I think as Corey mentioned at the beginning of the conference with field effects, we're still figuring out, you know, where that data is going to go. Providing perfect information, at least on the pitch effect side, is what we do. Our responsibility as a data collection company is to provide the most accurate data that we can. That's first and foremost before any analytics are done. So. I mean, that's always going to be the number one priority for us. And to go back to the gentleman's question, for those of you who are from the Bay Area, probably some historians here, but it was an Arizona Diamondbacks Giants game. It happened to be 98 or 99 when they walked Barry Bonds home. Showalter, yeah. They still talk about that. And that was, 14 years ago. I mean, that is still. So there's people have been criticizing managers for 135 years of baseball. It's going to continue for the next 135 years, no matter. You know, what data we put on TV or how educated the audience is or how educated the coaching staffs are.
And to answer the question you asked, I think that is it going to be the same information? Yeah, maybe the data is going to be there, but it's still an incredible skill to analyze that data. Mm-hmm. And that's where you really see some of the teams that are better suited for analyzing the data take off. Jonah Carey wrote a great book about it with the Tampa Bay Rays. So I still think that you could find out, even with everyone having the data, that doesn't mean it's an even playing field. You want to now get the stars with the pencils in their hands and by the computers rather than just with the bats in their hands.
I think we had another question.
I was just realizing that I was going to ask a direct question on that decision. I recall reading about that in 98 mm-hmm. when Bonds was intentionally walked with the bases loaded and the Giants down by two. And was that, based on statistics, a sound decision or was it just a lucky that?
Maybe one of you guys can. I don't know those statistics.
I work with Buck, and yeah, that's something he'll never forget either.
Yeah.
I think it paid off. I think he got.
Yeah, he got out of it.
Buck. He wanted no piece of Bonds. He just wanted to take his chance with the next batter. It was probably some gut. I mean, Buck is open to some stats.
Yeah.
But he likes to be, you know, the most prepared manager he possibly is. But there's other things that he just
One thing I noticed last year in the playoffs, Lamar Washington, the Rangers, he was like walking, intentionally walking Miguel Cabrera in the League Championship Series, and then Albert Pujols in the World Series, and I believe that really ultimately caught up with him because of the excessive number of intentional walks.
The 2002 World Series, I mean, Barry Bonds was, I was the baseball plant researcher, I was in the stadium, and we were all gathered in the first few innings, we would sit on the platform in left field, and I was on the stage, because then I have to go with the truck and do like the rest of the broadcast after the game. But, you know, we see Bonds getting walked with two outs and nobody on in the first inning of like game one of the World Series. Like, no one says that you should be doing, just putting a runner on base like that, but again, Barry Bonds wasn't anybody else. It's hard to say the average who worked with Barry Bonds could didn't apply to him.
Okay.
Over there, corner pocket.
I'm thinking of the case where you're speaking of having the analogous data, like poker probabilities on screen and win probabilities and risk reward and stuff. Has there been any attempt to, say, marry that with a synchronous online display of that? All that data, where the data doesn't clutter up the TV screen, but you can go online? And if so, has there been any, do any of the broadcasters consider a trade-off where you have limited commercial time on television, whereas if you coax people to go online, well, I use the phrase, you can offer them the opportunity to see ads constantly.
Yeah, that's definitely been something on the minds of all the broadcasters. They're looking to monetize any way possible, and to have eyes not on one but two screens is even better. So I do think that you'll eventually see it. I think that it's a matter of the technology for them also catching up in their organizations. I mean, just to be able to get that to happen still takes a lot of time for them to, as an organization, put it together. But no, yeah, I mean, that's something that it's going to definitely occur, and it probably already is with ESPN, I'd imagine, to some extent.
A GameCast?
Yeah, we have win probability for GameCast, but we're not driving traffic there during our event broadcast specifically. We're not saying tune into ESPN.com and follow along, and you can see this, that, and the other.
Yeah. Why not?
We might. We still, as much people watch either ESPN or Yahoo or CBS Sports Line or whoever, the in-game box score in the play-by-play, it still pales compared to what we're actually getting from a TV broadcast. So it's a very small percentage. There's 2,430 regular season games a year, and they're spread out. So those box scores don't get the traffic that a national TV broadcast would get. So there are people, I'm sure, who are sitting on their couch and using two screens, wherever they are on the train. But yeah, someday, we're not shy at ESPN in driving people cross-platform, across our different entities. So someday we'll probably, especially with sponsorship money, we'll probably do that.
But I think if you consider MLB.com as a platform, you can, today, watch the game. You can pull up very, complex or interesting statistics.
This is on at-bat, right?
Yeah, at-bat. So, I mean, some of that already exists. I don't know if they have the predictive stuff, but you can look at release points. You can look at pitcher break. It's all there if you want it. If you just want to watch the game, you can do that. So, I think to some degree, that exists. And I think you'll start to see some of the other broadcasters start to put some of that in.
Question back there?
You touched on it a little bit, but I was wondering if we're getting to a point or already there where the casual fan doesn't understand the language of the game in the sense that they might evaluate a player based on batting average, but you guys and the general managers and stuff are evaluating maybe on OPS or something else. How do you sort of bridge that gap to the point where mainstream media is reporting some of these more efficient or better statistics, if you will, to get the casual fan more on board with kind of what's going on?
That's the fight. That's my fight. I meet with the broadcasters regularly, and that's the big question. How can we put this on and use you without scaring to death the person who's been watching this game for 40 years? It's tough. And that's why when you watch a baseball game, you don't hear ISO mentioned on air. You don't hear BABIP, for the most part, mentioned on air. And if it is going to be mentioned on air, that's the skill of the broadcaster to be able to really explain what it is. And it's interesting because one of the things we've also talked about is something of like a luck meter. And the luck meter, which obviously would take Babbitt into account, would tell you that if you're a month into the season, and like let's say Austin Jackson a couple years ago at the Tigers, his rookie year, he was like batting 360 for the first couple months of the season. I think for him, like to be able to have a Babbitt, and well, he's probably not the best example since he is a rookie. You'd want someone who has past years with Babbitts. But if you notice that there's a huge disparity in the current Babbitt from what you know he's experienced in the past, that's something that you should alert the audience of. I think that's actually very newsworthy. But how do you do it without scaring them? How do you say Babbitt without scaring them? So I think that's literally a skill. We're coming up with some technology. It's, again, simplified.
Maybe changing the terminology?
So the luck meter. So the Bloomberg Sports luck meter instead of Babbitt. No, I mean, honestly, that is part of it. I mean, that's our challenge. That's the broadcaster's challenge. And, you know, that's whenever there is a reluctance to accept it, that's the reason why we do not want to scare off the viewer for the last 40 years.
Last year in our dead broadcast, you know, with Bobby Valentine and sometimes Kurt Schilling will do one, we would use Babbitt occasionally, depending on the talent and how comfortable they are. I think we've used FIP. We definitely use Run Saved a few times, if not more than that. And there's other ones that we use. Then we had the baseball tonight, we would use those and many more. But I remember being in a preseason baseball meeting probably in 2009, talking to our production team. And we said, this is the year we're going to put OPS to accompany the Triple Crown stats for every batter. And the production team, we're on the bus, but I will right now. We're adamant that we had to have like a little, we call it a bullet point, a little carrot, a little gold triangle that had a line underneath it that would indicate OPS and say on base plus slugging. So everyone would actually know what that meant. We'd only do it for the first month of the year, and then everyone would know it after the first month. That was the thought. So. You know, now we put all the mess up there, and hopefully don't think twice about it, but that was like a big deal, just like way back in 2009, to have to explain it, you know, with actually spelling it out.
That's actually the role of ESPN, you know. I mean, that's right now they're worldwide leaders, so it's actually the responsibility of the broadcaster to educate. And I think, so for some of the examples that I gave before, the on-base tracker and things like that, it will probably require some explanation in the early innings. And then hopefully by the fifth, sixth, seventh inning and late in the game, it won't have to be explained. And maybe it has to be explained the first month of the season, but hopefully by mid-season it won't have to be explained. But that is a major responsibility of the broadcaster, and I think that's why we all love our jobs. We're part of the storytelling of baseball, and if we could try to take it to a different level and take all the work you guys are doing and be able to get it on air, that's a heck of an accomplishment.
And I think a lot of these stats lend themselves nicely, at least today, to the specialty shows, Baseball Tonight, Clubhouse Confidential. You know, you have a whole network now, MLB Network, focused on baseball. So I think there's a destination for a lot of that today, and it really just depends on production and talent, how you integrate.
Yeah, so that works because Brian Kenny, you know, he's open to it. He was a great partner for us when he was on it. When I did Baseball Tonight, he was the backup to Carl Rapsch on the weekend, so I worked a lot with Brian. And he did a lot of radio in the last few years. He was at ESPN before moving over to MLB. But he loves that stuff, and he likes to learn about it, and it comes up naturally. You know, he's not doing anything that he doesn't believe in, so that's why it works.
Yeah, question. It struck me some of what you've been saying about making some advanced metrics available in real time to the fans who are watching, either on TV or at the park. I believe right now there's a prohibition on computers in the dugouts, and it struck me all of a sudden that, you know, you could have 10 or 15 million people watching a telecast, and the only person who doesn't understand the odds of the play that's happening is in the dugout making that decision.
And so it big binders back there.
It could make for some interesting cut-ins when you go to talk to the manager between innings. You could say, why did you do that? It was like a two-thirds chance of not working, and then they'd be like, what? So it could make for some good TV.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens. The NBA has the same, all the leagues do, but the NBA, you mentioned Mark Cuban about an hour ago.
Yeah.
So Mark Cuban is a pretty staff-friendly person. He's at Sloan every year in MIT. So they hired Roland Beach, who was from 82games.com. Last year, they won the title. Roland actually sat on the bench as one of their 40 assistant coaches. But he can't have a computer or an iPad or anything in there. So it's a lot of preparation. And then it's just trying to, quickly process what's happening and be as informed as possible and then communicate that message to Rick Carlisle, whoever, and make that adjustment that has Berea playing more now.
I'm picking back to last year's
World Series. I wasn't able to watch them all. I watched many. But I can't remember many innings where the sides were not retired fully bases loaded. Does that seem right to everybody here? That really happened? I mean, you look back to that, it would have been a great chance to describe sabermetrics. People get on base, you win if you get on base, and have a higher chance of getting home, right? And yet, the whole World Series, at least most of the games I saw, I can't remember any innings in which you didn't end base loaded. And that seems to be such an odd thing that happened, and yet the announcers weren't making much of it, they weren't talking much about it, and it happened every game I saw. So I'll leave it up to you.
That's the typical. So we've been so far talking about not wanting to scare off a mainstream audience. Now you just gave us a great example of the opposite of what happens when the educated baseball viewer is watching a game and you're pulling your hair out because you're watching such a situation. It's so perfect. There's such a story there, but that story's not being told. You know, again, it's a mix, and it's a very delicate mix. And the
person. Did we ever do anything for those games?
Yeah, we. We did not ruin the World Series, right?
No.
Look, I think that was a pretty exciting World Series. I think it's a very delicate balance, and I think honestly, more than anyone would probably think, the actual broadcaster has an absurd amount of power. The person with the microphone on has an absurd amount of power. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, maybe the word absurd, I'm just saying a great, an abundance of power. But they are the ones who determine how the story will be told. And you know, obviously ESPN liked Francona. They liked the way he told that story during the playoffs as well for Fox. So to answer your question, it really is who has the mic on and how do you want to tell that story. And John Smoltz, we worked with him at Turner, and Delmon Young lit up that first pitch fastball, and he, before that pitch, said, "Don't throw him a first pitch fastball." And what was in our notes? This guy hits around 4-something with 10 of his home runs against first pitch fastball. So, yeah,
it's. Smoltz on air.
So Smoltz went on air and said, "Do not throw him that first pitch." And what happens? Yahoo writes a great article about, you know, John Smoltz is doing his homework. It's really interesting, you know. It really is personality driven, and the person with the mic really has a lot of power as far as how that story is going
to
be told.
And sometimes they want the game to breathe too. Fox, we don't do the World Series, of course. Fox does, but you know, there's a lot of times where it's just crowd shots and silence, and the drama is there, and there's so much drama that was ingrained in that series. I love statistics. I wasn't feeling the same thing as you. I sometimes just wanted to enjoy the game, and the drama was already there. I didn't need to be told to me why it was important at this position or something like that.
Right. It's a balance between letting the game play out and then saying something that would add to your experience.
Real quickly to the point, one approach that we've taken is things that we hear. Talent talk a lot about, we see if we can prove that in our data. A couple things is the 100 pitch count. I think the average fan knows 100 pitch count is a storyline, what happens at 100 pitches. Does something show up in our data, whether it's movement, break, velocity, that we can say, all right, he's at 98 pitches, he's really starting to deteriorate, or at his 100 pitch, he's actually got some stuff left. Or is it you always hear keeping the ball down in the zone? So how can we visualize to really make the talent look smarter? Say, yeah, you're right. The more this pitcher keeps the ball down in the zone, the more effective he's going to be. We have a product called Command Effect where we track the catcher's glove. We say, is he hitting his spots? We have data now to say, they say, look, Jonathan Sanchez is leaving the ball up in the zone, not hitting a spot. We can back that up with data. So that's an approach we're taking as well.
The end. are there any more questions from the crowd before we wrap up the panel with the gentleman here who you can either blame or credit for your enjoyment of baseball games this season? I think that we covered our proverbial bases, you guys. So thank you, everyone, and I want to thank everybody on the panel for doing this. I think that we learned a lot, and hopefully we'll see more analytics in baseball games. And if we don't, now we know who to call.